was, you know, like...
Yeah, and boy, we covered it.
He covered it differently.
Oh, yeah.
He phrases it differently, but I'll call him a play.
I phrased it as how to train a newbie, because if you do what they do in the porn movies, you'll fail. You have to know how to seduce somebody, how to establish trust and commonality. And we talked about that. But we did a lot of other stuff during the discussion, too, that's very rich. My style of teaching is different in that I'm not just sitting here lecturing down at you guys. I encourage interruption, as you'll see. I rejoice in it because I make no pretense to know everything. If, as I said, my request is that you consider putting on an invisible t-shirt that says the word mentor on the front. If you have something to add, we want to hear it, all of us. Okay? So I'm not going to slap you down for having new ideas or disagreeing with me. I'm not attached to any of this stuff. I'm really not. These guys can tell you. I love this stuff. It's very pleasurable for me because I get to learn, too, in the process. Okay. So tonight's discussion, for those of you who have read the article, anyways, I want to brag a little bit about me. I'm going to kind of give you guys my bona fides, or however the hell you pronounce it. I've hosted somewhere over 3,000 events in my lifetime. Why? Because I'm just that guy. I love bringing people together in joy. I love creating circumstances that normally would never occur and that cause everybody to go home happy. Everybody. That's my talent. Not everybody has the wiring, not everybody has the inclination, not everybody, you know, necessarily has the perceptions to do it. My reason for talking about this is that those of us who have at least the nature to be able to want to give permission to other people should be able to succeed at it. So this is what this is about tonight, okay? I used some stories, but there's many, many more. Because permission giving is not just something we do for other people. It's also something we do for ourselves. And I'll talk more about that. But one of the things that I did, I think, I don't think I did it in the article, but I'll just flash it at you guys right now. This is kind of a good overview here. Okay, these events here, okay, these are the tiniest fraction of the events that Fetishman San Diego has had in the last 5.5 years. The tiniest fraction. If you zoom in on those pictures, in every picture, everybody's happy. It's not a bunch of strangers, you know, kind of unsure about each other. They're just glad. You can't Photoshop happy into a picture. Well, the same thing that works for large groups of people works when you're dealing with a shy newbie, when you're trying to get through to people in other ways. It's always my secret hope that someone who hears this will want to take on a little bit of community leadership, because we're always needing more of that. Because someone who is good at inviting people and enrolling them tends to make, in my opinion, the best DOMs too. You know, that's just, you know, the same leadership skills carry across. I've noticed that. What I'm always looking for whenever I first interact with somebody is how to establish commonality with them as soon as possible. That's why I talked about touch in the article. Because I have a limited time if I want to establish credibility with somebody. The thing about me that I have no control over is that I'm 6'5", 270 pounds, and I've been this big since 1968. It is very easy for people to see me as the stereotype of the bad dad, of the scary, you know, dominant male. You know, I mean, I'm white, I'm male, I'm cisgender, I'm dominant, I'm sadistic. That's a scary unknown for a lot of people, especially here in Club X. That has been something that I have been finding, is that people have been wary, even if they know of me, because I still symbolize something to them just by existing. So I have to be very gentle, I have to be very patient, I have to work very hard to break down the walls between us, because it's not something you can wait to have happen. Either it's going to happen or it's not. The philosophy of giving permission, as I talk about in the article, is about looking at the situation and seeing what it is that people really want. Okay, what I want and what they want, and how we can make all those things come together. if I am going to play with the newbie for the first time, which is my party trick, it is my specialty, one of the things that works very well for me in a play party situation, see, gay men play differently than the pansexual crowd. We do freeform play, and that's not something I see in Club X. And that's not a bad thing. It's not a good thing. It's just different.
The San Diego thing?
Yeah, I believe that.
It wasn't like that where I came from. It was much more freeform.
Yeah.
Where was that?
Ventura?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because one of the, and this is not a complaint, this is just an observation, because I have been bringing this up at the Left of the Slash dinners, which is for dominance. It's a support system for dominance. It happens once a month. You'll be hearing about it. I brought up several topics about the gap between gay men and the pansexual crowd, as that I say, will show up to a pansexual play party, but no one will play with this. And I didn't realize that there's a different protocol going on. What I realized is from their feedback is that they make plans beforehand and fill up their dance cards. Okay, that way they already know who they're going to play with and that they're already okay to play with. Okay, I'm sure that that's a great way of keeping new people at a distance. But it can be really lonely when you're not on the inside. What I do to get past that, which I do a lot at different play parties, is if I can get one person to play with me and do it in such a way where everybody can see me in action, suddenly my dance card starts filling up really fast. For instance, at this in Folsom Street Fair, I went to something called the Cuff, K-U-F party for kink under 40. So here I am almost 60. What the hell am I doing at that? Well, they specifically invited the guy that I was staying with to invite some of his older friends who had some experience to bring some variety to the party that was there. And when my buddies and I arrived, metaphorically speaking, it was as if barracudas had just arrived at a school of sardines. All these guys in their 20s, early 20s, with very slim hips and those assless panties. You know, everybody was wearing them with tragic haircuts. And I'm not putting it down, that's just what was going on. Well, they were all flocking, you know, like in panic away from these big, scary-looking guys that they had no idea of. So how the hell do I do that? One, I consciously went past the problem at hand. The problem at hand was that I was an unknown character, an unknown quantity, and I was big and fucking scary. I'm huge, okay? What I did is that I found out who the organizers of the event were, and I befriended them. I spoke to them, I praised what they were doing, and I meant it. And I established my credentials by showing them the work that I'd been doing. And I said, I am shy. I don't want to come across as a predator. Would you please help me to find somebody to play with? They said, him. I go, okay. And it just, from then on, it just went like a conga line. You know, everybody was waiting. One of the things that I talk about is the zone. Okay, this is a term I invented. Once we get to the flogging classes, we'll talk a lot more about the zone. I've played with somebody. I've put everything I've got into it, all my style, all my gentle energy that I put into it, and all my commonality, and all this wonderful establishing trust with a capital T. And then I turn around, and I look, and there'll be people standing in a semicircle with big eyes. And they'll be so close that I could almost hit them with the flogger, but no farther than that. And I'll say, you. They're like, me? Uh-huh. Oh, but I've never done it before. It's okay. You know, I'll take care of you. And so then the things that I'll do to establish trust and give them permission to give into their feelings is I will give them certain standard phrases that I use. And I do this in many play circumstances. I never fail. Why? Because I tell them, I'm not here to just beat on you. I could do that to a brick wall. I am here to connect with you. My goal is that 20 years from now, when we see each other, we're going to high-five each other. You say that wonderful, remember that wonderful time? Because it puts my ass on the line, and I'm using very clear, non-wimpy words. What's the word? I'm using, yeah, I'm being very direct. I'm not using passive voice in the slightest bit. I'm not using weasel words. I'm saying, this is what you can count on. This is what I stand for. This is what I am here for. This is not normal for most people. They're so busy caught up in their own noise in their own head. They're not conscious about, hello, welcome. They're not conscious about establishing the trust as soon as possible. One of the things I talked about in the article, would you stand up, please? Please. Let's hear it for our beautiful assistant. Okay, let's say that she and I are going to play for the first time. She has no clue who the hell I am. And I'm not saying that this is perfect in her case. Each time that I interact with somebody, I use something different. But what I'm doing, notice that I'm touching her at this moment. I'm doing a non-sexual touch. However, I tried this with somebody at one of the Club X play parties, and she jumped 4 feet away from me and wouldn't come any closer from then on. That's a different thing. I can't say that it works every time. But let's say that I do talk to somebody, and I use this tone of voice. I'm not bullshitting in the slightest bit, because her bullshit detectors are going at full crank. She's watching to see what the hell's going on. But I will do what I can to establish trust. I'll introduce myself. I'll talk about my level of experience, whatever. Whatever works. Okay. Each person has a different story to tell. In my particular case, the reason why I'm touching, as I talk about in the article, is because I'm a multimedia guy. That's my nature. If I am interacting with somebody just over text, it's very narrow bandwidth. I'm not that guy. I can't do that. I have to have not just your bullshit detector going this way, but my bullshit detector going that direction too. If I'm not getting a good vibe from you, I'll move along. I say, thank you, I'll talk to you later. If somebody's drunk or stoned, that's something I'm really watching for, because I won't play with somebody who's intoxicated, obviously. But also, if I am touching, okay, this right here, this touch right here on the back of the neck, this is what I call the reassuring daddy touch. That's what I call it for me. It is wired into us as apes, as troop monkeys, that this touch, done gently and warmly and affectionately, is meant to be an approval touch. Okay? If I am actually going to start playing with her, I will touch this way. I'm not grabbing her titties. I might scratch up here in the middle of the back. There is nobody that doesn't like getting scratched in the middle of the back. Anybody. Because we have dead skin cells that really need to go away. What I'm doing is I'm starting in such a way where she is getting endorphinated, whether she's conscious of it or not. Okay? If I'm going to be playing with somebody, okay, and I need to grip, I will grab, again, non-sexually. I'll do it in a firm way across the abdomen. If I'm playing with somebody for the first time, they're ready to trigger in a million different directions. I'm not giving them that opportunity. If I'm going to be flogging, of course, I only do in the necessary area of... Turn around, please. In this area here. So what does this have to do with giving permission? At every moment, I'm wearing down her defenses because she's learning that I'm not just all hands and glands, which is the stereotype. Yeah. That I'm not trying to climb all over her like, you know, she's my newest conquest. What I'm doing instead is keeping my word, where I say, I'm here to connect with you as a friend. As somebody that, you know, could be valuable in my life. I'll use words like that, and I mean it. That's an important thing. Because if I'm reaching across the distance, because there's always going to be distance between us as human beings, you know, that I want to be able to let her know that, yes, there is trust, but also that I'm going to guide her through the whole process, that I'm going to be the one who takes over. That's what the Dom does. But I'm going to be doing it in a responsible way, in a kind way, and... that she's going to affect me afterwards. Okay, thank you. Let us embrace. Now, what we're doing right here. I like that purring noise, too. I use that one a lot. See, what we're doing right now is an embrace. This is different from a typical hug. We don't do the A-frame, clap, clap, dismiss. We do a nice hug.
We do have nice hugs.
Thank you. And see, I'm giving you permission to give them, too. Thank you very much. Let's hear it for our start. Okay, thank you. Giving other people permission. I'm going to go sidebar into community leadership. There might be someone in this room who could really use this or who's listening to this. I am astonishingly good at getting people to come to big events that didn't exist before I used my words to create it. The secret about events is that they do not exist except in the power of your words until they actually happen. If I say, come to this movie night, it's about our history, it's about the history of the Folsom Street Fair, it's going to give some wonderful documentary footage that shows what things were like back in the old days. If you're too young to know, this is a great way to get a viewpoint on it. If you show up early, we're going to do a group photo. And you don't have to be in the photo unless you want to, but most people do. And then after that, then we're going to have a raffle, and we're going to have all this fun stuff. And the whole purpose of it is to rejoice that we made it through some rough times, and now we're in a golden age. So come be a part of things and be a part of the fun. We'll get hundreds of people that will show up for that. Why does it work? Because of the word why. Now this applies to this topic tonight. See, if I'm telling people, okay, if I'm on Facebook and I post something, this event, who, what, when, where, how much, almost nobody will show up. Because it's just another damn thing. And they're flying at you all the time. But if you include the why, if you say, this is why I passionately care about this, this is what gets me up in the middle of the night because I'm so excited, and this is what I see happening. What I'm doing is I'm using the language of enrollment, which is part of giving permission. By giving them your truth from the heart without treating them like you people out there, the secret of enrollment is the same for individuals as it is for crowds, as it is for speaking publicly. Right now, I'm speaking as if I'm speaking to one person with all my heart, from the heart. But the secret of that is that it's also affecting each one of you the same way. You're getting enrolled in what I'm saying. You want to hear what I have to say. But that also has to do with anything, that by speaking your truth, living transparently, the thing you want to watch out for is a suit of armor. You don't want to hide behind an act, because people can tell. We all have really good bullshit detectors. So don't give bullshit detectors anything to work on. By actually speaking your truth, being authentic, being kind, and being fully self-expressed, what happens is that people are a lot more likely to whip their heads around and pay attention to what you're saying, and they're more likely to say, okay, I vote for what he's saying, let's do it, or what she's saying. This applies on an individual play basis. This applies on a larger basis. It's wonderful. Okay. Any thoughts, any questions so far? Any observations? Because you're very welcome to interrupt if anything occurs. Yes?
I just want to say, hell yeah.
Okay, thank you.
I want to say one thing. I was actually just at a wedding this weekend. Sorry, did you have more to say? Okay. But basically, the person who threw, who was getting married, mm-hmm. has been friends with me since we were 16 years. We've been friends for 16 years, and she had an idea of what she wanted her wedding to be, and she made it so. And she made it so by making everyone so happy that they made it so for her.
Yes, 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 yes.
She had this idea, and everyone drank the Kool-Aid and followed her lead, and it was incredible.
Yep.
And that is inspirational, because it was
perfect.
It worked out so well, and it was so wonderful, and no one spoiled it. It was just
thank you.
Amazing.
I'm going to talk a little bit about what you just said, but I'm going to use a different word. Tribe. Okay. In the old days, we were taught that the monoculture was everything. There's only one type of relationship. There's only one type of acceptable role for women. There's only one acceptable type of role for men. There's only one type of sexuality, as I've spoken before here. We've all learned otherwise, that all of these things are fluid and should be and always have been. But now we're not lying to ourselves about it. What is happening is that we're going deeper and deeper into tribalism in our culture because of the internet. Because you can go on the internet and find people who have your same ideas and your same perversions and your same turn-ons. You go, I'm not the only one. I'm not a freak. There's nothing wrong with me. Okay. when you understand this concept, then it's very, very, very easy to gather tribe to you, whatever that tribe is. That's why you'll notice there's so many poly groups. There's so many leather families. Because, again, we're finding tribe. Our brains are not evolved to deal with 7,000 Facebook friends. And our brains recoil from it, so we have to find some way to deal with friendships on a more intimate and real level. And if we're going to be around people, then it'd be really nice if we're all on the same wavelength. The success of larger events involves giving everyone a stake in the success of that event, where everyone brings their A game. So how do you do that? By saying, this is what's going to happen, this is what the dream is, and this is what the result will be. Well, then people then can vote with their feet. Is this something that I want, or is this something I don't want? The people who show up are the most dedicated, and they're all going to contribute to make sure that that dream comes true, which exactly illustrates your point. So, have I talked about flog swarms here? Okay, so I hate to repeat myself. But the main point I wanted to make about that, and there's a big article about it, and if you guys haven't seen it, it's quite nice. But the idea is, the whole thing, for hours, it's coordinated kinky play, where everybody brings their A game, and we just make it up as we go along, and everybody goes, okie doke. Like, for instance, okay, if I call it the culture of okie dokie, yes.
Do you want to be recording this?
Why not?
You are?
I am.
Oh. Okay.
Thank you. Good point. Thank you for helping Grandpa. Normally I may forget, and thank you, that does help. But I wrote an article about the culture of okie dokie, which ties into this. If you have credibility, okay, this will be on the test, you guys. Okay. If I go up to a stranger in a bar, and I say, I'm the boss of you, okay, or you know, whatever, Neil Slave or whatever, I'm not going to get a lot of traction if they don't know me and they don't have any idea who the hell I am and what my qualifications are. I am quite clearly conscious that in order for me to be effective as a server, as a leader, and as a tribe member, you have to earn credibility with a capital C every day. People think that the most important currency is money, and it hasn't been in a long time. The most important currency is credibility, because you can't buy it with any amount of money. But you have to earn it constantly. You have to keep putting it in the bank. In a tribal culture, which is what we're very much entering into, especially with Club X and with Fetishmen and all that, very tribal. When you understand that in order for you to be effective as a leader, as a fellow tribe member, when you constantly put new credibility into the bank, it buffers against several things. Against you losing your reputation because somebody's smearing you, it happens. Okay? Or some bottom decides they're going to take your ass down, you know, because they're not happy with how things turned out. What you do is by keeping your word, by following through, by living by your word, so that when you say, okay, I'm going to put my ass on the line and I'm going to do this, and then it fails, it's okay, at least you tried. Don't be afraid of the failing. Be afraid of not keeping your word. That is the most important thing, because people watch. They observe. See, if I decide that you're the devil, you know, you're a bad person, I'm going to tell everybody what a horrible, terrible person you are. It's a lot like two monkeys in a troop, and one of them screams and smashes the other one with a tree branch, you know, and well, the crowd around you looks. What's going on here? And they're not looking at the one who hit you. They're looking at your reaction. Okay, what's going on here? Why? And I mean, is it going to be fight or is it going to be flight? Those are the two wired-in responses.
Or freeze.
Pardon me?
Fight, flight, or freeze.
Well, yeah, thank you. Fight, flight, or freeze. Well, freeze tends to be a form of flight. That's just, you know, there's debate on that. But anyway, so then thank you. If instead we find another way, which is what I teach during these classes, to find the other way, I'll call it the third way, we'll call it the fourth way today, where someone does not lose and someone doesn't have to necessarily win at their expense. Non-competitive, cooperative. if I, like, okay, giving a good example, and this all ties in with credibility, which is part of the topic, okay? I know I'm wandering a lot, but
you're
it does tie back
to win-win, right?
Oh, yeah, very much so. Very much win-win. Like, for instance, I used to host dance parties. I've hosted hundreds of dance parties. I've never made money at it. I did it in a way to try and bring some joy into a community that had done a lot of dying. And so then my parties were hugely successful. We'd get 400, 600 men dancing every Friday night. We only had one bad thing happen in 2.5 years of doing this every Friday night. A young man, about 29 years old, which to me is young, started acting out. He was yelling at the bartenders. He was arguing with the DJ. He was just being a pill. And many people brought him to my attention. I said, okay, I'll take care of this. No problem. So I went up to him. I said, come here. He was a little puzzled, but he knows my hugs. So I gave him a hug. And while I'm holding him close in this noisy-ass dance bar, I speak quietly into his ear. And I say, I got a favor to ask you. He says, what's that? I said, well, I know you're crabby tonight. It's okay. I'm human. I get crabby too. And as you know, I take full responsibility for the safety, well-being, and success of the space. And you're kind of harsh in the vibe. So my request of you is you take off tonight. You just kind of head on home and take care of your needs. Take care of yourself. Be good to yourself. And when you come back next week, we're going to make a big fuss over you because we want you back because you belong here. Just not tonight. Why don't you head on home? Okay. So when they came back the next week, and I made a big fuss over him and welcomed him back with open arms, he never caused a problem again. The point that I'm making here is the difference between force and strength. There's a big difference. What I did is that anybody who knew about what happened saw how I was being. Remember, the monkey troop watches the conflict and they judge. They vote with their feet. Is this a leader I choose to follow? As opposed to me just being a big bullet. That's it, you're 86, you're all asshole. No matter which direction I look at you at, you're out of here forever. There's no strength in that. It doesn't move the ball forward. By being someone who keeps his word, by someone who finds ways where everybody can still have some redemption, I'm standing way the hell out from most people. And that has to do with being a sir. This has to do with being a leader. Okay? Because those of us who are in the kink community in this room are operating in the light. But let's talk about the people who are operating in the dark. The people who would never be caught dead hanging around with Club X. Why? Because they're the sort of people you hear about, and they do exist, who harm other people and find ways to get away with it. Okay? Obviously, that's not somebody I want to hang around with socially. I'd be the first one to say, that's the one, officer, arrest them. Okay? So they don't want to hang around with the likes of us. Our community, our tribe, is based upon credibility with a capital C, how much you have in the bank. I'm stating a kind of an obvious point, but I'm going to talk more about it. The more you are known, the more that you establish yourself as somebody who is a stand-up kind of person, the more likely you're going to have a full dance card when the time comes. The more likely that you're going to have a big support system if your name starts getting smeared. The more likely you're going to be able to recover if you screw up in some way. You take ownership and you do what you need to in order to clean up the mess. Again, because if you're conscious about credibility as a form of currency, here's what happens at the end of things for, like, me. Okay, I've had credibility for a long, long time. I don't need it, but I have a lot of it. So what do I do with it? I turn around and I give it away with both hands to someone new who shows up as a star, someone who I believe in, and I reintroduce them to people and say, this is why I love this person. This is somebody that I really value. This is a very, very good person. And let me tell you why. And every single of the words that come out of my mouth become true for everyone else there. That person that I'm praising does not have to claw their way up an ice cliff of indifference to try and break into the society. They're now on the inside. Because the one with the most credibility has just blessed them. So just be aware that that is one of the benefits also of having large amounts of credibility, where you get to help other people too. It's very important. I think we have some people that can tell some stories about this. Where I'm going with this is that this philosophy is not just the silly stuff I wrote about in the article. There's a lot more to it. Again, getting back to something I promised at the beginning of the talk, this includes giving yourself permission too. This is not a practice lifetime. Okay. Death comes to us all. If anything that I've learned from having lost so many people in my life, tomorrow is promised to no one. Now is the time to take some damn chances. The problem is, we want to keep our lives flat and risk-free. We're afraid that we might fail. Okay, so we're always trying to keep it flat. The only person that has a life this way is a dead person. It's not much of a life. That yes, we might fail, but we can also hit some peaks. The goal in my life that I have for you guys is that your trend still goes up and down, but it trends upward. Okay. So how do we get to that place? By taking chances and following your dreams, creating some dreams, living powerfully. I cannot urge this enough. Speaking as someone who is a Dom, okay, I'm going to brag. Okay, I promised I would brag at the beginning and I never got around to it. I have huge successes in my personal life and many other ways. As a community leader, I've been in charge of some damn group or another since 1981, and I've had to learn the hard way on a lot of stuff, but I've learned. I have two hyper-devoted slaves that just adore me. I've got a husband, 25 years. He's totally vanilla. He loves my slaves as his best friends. I'm going to Palm Springs at the end of this month for Palm Springs Leather Pride, and I'm going up with a whole bunch of guys who are in my leather family and a whole bunch more that are coming too to join in with us. We're not there necessarily for the contest. We're there just for the celebration of being together and doing some wildly perverse stuff at the parking lot party at night. Yeah, that's a good one to go to. I do recommend that.
Yeah.
Pardon me?
Meow.
Yeah. But where I'm going with this is that in order to... I'm a very happy man. And at this phase of my life, as I look back on things, like I said, I want nothing more than to get everybody to that place too. Like I said, that's my goal. It's not about me. We're going to talk about Maslow's hierarchy of needs. Okay. How many people? Raise your hand. Heard of it? Okay, there you go. Nice, well-educated group. Okay. Shaped like a pyramid. Down at the bottom of the pyramid are the basic needs. Oxygen, sleep, food, you know, shelter, that sort of thing. The higher up you go, the more esoteric the different layers are. You can't skip past any of the layers. You have to kind of work your way up. But at the tip of the pyramid, what's at the top, y'all?
Self-actualization.
Yep, self-actualization, enlightenment. One of the key things about that, when you reach that place, and I'm not saying I'm anybody's perfection, but I am a lot more self-actualized than most people. But the number one thing that identifies us is we turn around and help others to get to that place too. It's kind of the law. It really is. And so that's what this is about. So getting back to the main topic, because I do tend to wander, it's what happens when you get old. And I've never been a particularly concise thinker. Back to permission giving. Giving permission to yourself. I have a whole bunch of stories, but I'll just choose one. Okay. I was at Black's Beach about 1980, 81. Back in those days, we would slather on the baby oil and we'd wear our little bikinis and work on our tan line. Oh, those more innocent days. Yeah, my husband Dennis just had, I think, surgeries number 16 and 17 to have skin cancer removed, so... Yeah, whatever. Anyway, so then I was at Black's Beach. I was going like 4 or 5 days a week during the summertime. And I'd see the same faces all the time. Large amounts of male homosexuals on their towels down at the north end of the beach. And this guy showed up that none of us had ever seen before. And immediately, it was like a bunch of prairie dogs. And this guy had the most spectacular build, not as in like a gym bunny, but like somebody who was like a farm worker or something like that. Really nice build to him. Handsome, handsome, handsome. And he comes up and he strips down. Well, everybody else is going, and I sat there and I was doing the same thing and I thought, you know, if I don't do something about this on my 80th birthday, I'm going to kick myself in the ass. So I thought, I don't know what to do, but I'm just going to make it up as I go along. And I pushed myself past my shyness. I grabbed two oranges. I strolled over to him. I said, here. I tossed him an orange. He caught it. I said, I'm Tony. Who are you? You know, where are you from? Again, getting over myself, because there's the voice in our head. I'm going to talk more about the voice in our head. Bottom line is, we had a really good time. Drawing the line of discussion over exactly how many times we had a good time, but it was a lot. But yeah, oh, good, happy memories. But okay, I just said I would talk about something. What was it again?
Giving permission.
Giving, well, yeah. But there was another thing I was going to sidebar, and then I just forgot it. Oh, it's hell being old. Too many things going through my mind. Anyways.
Layers of enlightenment.
We've kind of gone past that one.
Yes.
Damn it. Going to have to edit this whole thing out to make myself look bad. Oh, Lord, there was something really good I was just going to mention. Okay, so let's just pause for thoughts and observations, questions, anything like that. What are your thoughts as we go through this? Be opinionated.
I'm just listening. I'm trying not to think.
That's fine. It happens a lot. Yeah, there's a lot of stuff coming across the pike here, and I apologize.
No, I actually have thoughts. When do we start hitting things?
Oh, that's coming. Oh, that is definitely coming.
Exactly.
Now, one of the things that I did is I sent out the thing where I talked about, here's the article I want you to read, here's the new video I just posted, all that stuff. How many people saw the video of the three-fingered hold on a flogger? You did. Okay. That's the sort of stuff we're going to talk about. Okay, show of hands. How many people here have a flogger?
I'll borrow one.
Yeah.
I have access.
Oh, okay. There you go. Very good. So I think the next one we're going to have a practical. The folks with stomping ground saying we can do a practical here after all. We just can't have sex.
Right.
Okay.
You don't have human inside human.
Got it.
Yeah.
So
damn it.
So silicone inside human is okay?
For educational purposes.
Huh. Oh. Well, that's good to know. So the next one of these, which will be in 2 weeks from today, is going to be a practical. It's going to be all about flogging all levels. What all levels means is some of you are more advanced than others. Some of you are absolute beginners. I can cope with all of it. If somebody's very good at it, I'm going to have you help me teach. Because the goal is to get everybody to a very good, high, advanced level. So what is it that qualifies making things advanced? When I play with people, I play differently with each person. I want you guys to have that same flexibility. So if I play with, you know, 10 people during the course of the evening, if you follow what I'm doing, it's different with each person. I want you to have that level of flexibility and expertise. Okay.
Yay.
Yay. Well, if we do get to more advanced stuff, then we're going to talk about technical poi. Who's familiar with technical poi? Okay. Of course he is. Okay. If you go to a luau and they've got those flaming balls on ropes and they're doing different things, or if you see somebody Florentine flogging, that's poi. There's a lot of stuff you can do that is fancy with floggers and whips and things like that. Okay. We'll be covering that at a more advanced stage later. But it's a way of putting on a show to get applause. Hey, we're a bunch of dons. We love to show off, and we deserve to be applauded for it. And there's a lot of fun involved. For instance, I don't know if you guys, how many people here have seen the Flame Whips video? You have, yeah. So it's pretty eye-opening, isn't it? And we're talking not actual flames, we're talking about digital fiber optic flames. It's really awesome. and it's a way of being applauded in a play space where everybody just wishes they were you. And let's face it, that's awfully nice, you know, from a Don standpoint. So we'll cover more of that sort of stuff. So that thought is permanently gone. I don't know what the hell it was. So continuing. Giving
I had a question.
Sure.
In the memory that you were relating, you said you grabbed a couple of oranges and tossed one to them. What would you have done if you did not have that prop?
I would have come up with something else. I would have said, you want me to rub some lotion on your back? Because they always want that. You know, when you're out working on your suntan, you know, then everybody needs some help with their back.
There should be big, bulky muscles in the way.
No, yeah. Body, oh, those terrible muscles in the way. Well,
I just want to get a strain or a cramp or something.
Yeah.
Goodness gracious.
Well, okay, bringing up another story that illustrates it. Thank you. Thank you for the opportunity. I used to have, with my older boyfriend, we had a 1969 Triumph TR6. The brightest red color you could ever see in your life. It was verging on orange, but I mean, in daylight, it undoubtedly reflected in the ultraviolet, because man, that fucker was bright. And it had one of the very first custom license plates in the state of California. When it became legal, this is back in the 70s, then my older boyfriend said, well, what license plate do we want for it? I said, well, that's easy. MR space FISTR. Mr. Fister. Well, that was known as pokey bait. In the Navy, pokey bait meant, you know, a good way to get pussy. But, you know, the way that I did it is that I would drive through Balboa Park and I would listen for some young Marine going, yo, Mr. Fister, nice car. Would you like a ride? Never failed. Never failed. But there was one time, see down, you know where Marston Point is? Okay, second story. Pardon me? What?
This is great license
plate. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Right. I have room for two.
Well, you have to have them steer.
Well, I also came up with a few other people's license plate, license plates. ZPDUDA. No, ZP, yeah, D-U-D-A, ZPD Duda. And also, I had a 1971 Chrysler New Yorker with the license plate 19FTYOT, 19-foot yacht. Yeah, so anyways, moving on, Chris Craft. Moving on, we're getting off topic. We got to stay rigorous, damn it. So anyway, so then that was the pokey bait thing, but in the same area of Balboa Park, down at Marston Point, the loop that used to be known as the Fruit Loop.
Used to be.
Oh, it might still be. But back in those days, that was where everybody went with their skimpy bathing suits to work on their tan lines there. And I was seriously like a barracuda with these guys, because some Navy guy, some Marine would come up and was curious about things, and pretty soon I'm rubbing lotion on his back, and half an hour later I'm down in the canyon fucking him. Happened a lot. But again, the secret is you're only giving them permission to do what they wanted in the first place. And when you understand that, then you can keep pushing that button over and over and over again. Now, I don't know if I have said this or not, but I stopped counting somewhere around 3,000 men that I've had sex with. Back in the 70s, it was common. It was the thing to do. I was a tall top, big dick, like to fuck older guys. My dance card was full. And that's not a brag, it's just my history. And what makes me peculiar is that I did not die. I didn't even get infected. So, here I am. But the point is that nearly every single one of those play situations was me giving somebody else permission. I developed the theory a long time ago, and I've never seen anything to prove it wrong. That's why I wanted it to be the topic tonight. When you give someone permission to do what they already wanted to do, that's the essential point of being a dom, to me. You're not trying to force them to do something against their will. That's, you know, you lose a lot of consent that way. And I've never been that kind of guy. In a way, that sort of makes me a bit of a service top, meaning that where I'm taking care of their needs while I'm taking care of mine as well. I'm not one of those people that, you know, grinds people under my heel. It's not my nature. I'm not one who disparages the submissive. I love them, I honor them, I think they're wonderful, and they're just as important as I am. That's my philosophy. You know, other people may disagree. That's fine. They have classes for that too. But where I'm going with this is that when I use my perception, when I use questions to lead people, when I'm first getting to know somebody as a playmate, I will use every technique I have to find out where their pleasure center is. So the metaphor that I give is you take the top of their skull and lift it up on a hinge, look around until you find that pleasure center, and you jam your thumb down on it. Okay, that's my goal when I'm playing with somebody. In order to get to that quickly, when I do that dozens of times, you know, in the course of a month, like I did this last month, I have honed the skills to a very high level. I trust my gut. I need to talk about that. At the last class, we discovered that the vast majority of people in this room are what are called NFs. We're going to have a separate class for that. Because we found out that nearly everybody in the room, with a few beautiful exceptions, is highly perceptive, highly intuitive, and they feel. They lead with their big, beautiful hearts. They use their intuition. What I say to you now, as I've said before, when you use that intuition a lot and trust it, it gets better and better and stronger and more honed. Don't discount intuition. Don't discount perception. The reason why is because there's an actual book on the topic, Blink, by Malcolm Gladwell. I think I mentioned it last time. It's about brain structures that allow us to make snap decisions that turn out right. One of the questions that I ask people is, when was the last time, okay, I'll ask you, when was the last time that you made a snap decision and totally failed as a result? Because of your own actions, not anybody else's. Can't think of it. Same question, you.
I'm trying to think.
Mm-hmm. Okay, same question.
Can I think of one?
Okay. Anybody got anything you can say? My point is, we don't normally have that discussion. Because we discount intuition as a guiding force in our culture. Should be logical about things, you know, be more rigorous. You need to, you know, fit inside this box. The thing is that there's so much more, infinitely more outside the box. And that if you trust your gut and you start really paying attention to how much information you're really gathering when you're interacting with somebody, especially for the first time, you have something to share. Let's hear it.
No, I just thought of probably the last time it really
failed
me.
Okay, tell me, please.
I was in my early 20s and desperate to get into kink.
Mm-hmm.
And I fell in with the wrong crowd.
Mm-hmm.
And I paid for it very, very badly.
Yes. I honor that.
I ended up in the ER and in critical care for several days.
Yep.
And for burn ward. And this is some of the scars that are left from it. So that was probably the last time it failed me.
Yep.
And I would attribute it to, I was so desperate, and it was a different world then.
Yeah.
And there were, and you know, it was harder to network.
Yeah. And there were predators who liked to be outside the network.
Yes.
Did they ever go to jail?
DA refused to prosecute.
Yeah. Yes.
Tried.
Mm-hmm.
I would say that the time when my intuition fails me is when I ignore it.
Yes.
Most.
Yeah.
When it doesn't have enough force behind it to actually get me to do the thing that I feel that needs to be done.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only time it really fails me, is when it isn't alerting me urgently enough to overcome my inhibitions. Or I don't turn my inhibitions off.
Mm-hmm.
I just leave them there and ignore what I'm feeling.
I don't, you know, I trust my gut. If I get any vibe from at a play party and I get a vibe from, he might be a really nice sub, and I look at, and something triggers, and I just go, nope.
Yeah.
And that head triggers.
Always value that. Always.
It may not be accurate, but I'd rather not run into that again.
Which brings an additional point. Thank you for bringing that up. I have a standard phrase. Just because someone is feeling needy does not obligate you to be feedy. Okay? Yes?
No,
I don't have a masculine. I can't speak for how it is out in the pan community, but there's a shitload more bottoms than there are tops in the gay men's community. A lot of bottoms, and holding my hands apart, drawing them in closer, fewer tops. Drawing in closer, fewer kinky tops. Drawing in closer, fewer esteemed, high quality, respected, and well loved in the community dom tops.
What's the difference between a top and a kinky top?
I don't know. In the gay men's community, the regular top just fucks. You know, kinky top, we flog, we fuck, we do a whole bunch of stuff. It's more extreme intimacy than just sex. Yes?
It's a position, top and bottom. It's a position in space.
Right.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, my terminology is not as rigorous as many people would prefer, and I apologize for that, because I've been talking this way for so many decades, it's hard for me to get out of this way of talking. I'm trying
just
to open up my mind.
Look at Urban Dictionary.
Yes.
Take a definition that they like.
Yeah. I like, wow. So I remembered what I was going to say. I finally remembered what I was going to say. It finally came back to me. So we're going to talk about the sock puppet. Okay? Oh, yeah. I mean, who has a spare sock? Oh, dear. Oh, my. Your imaginations are running wild, aren't they? Oh, yeah, that could work. Okay, yeah, please. Yeah, I'll just do this. Thank you. Okay, it's not a sock, but there it is. Okay, well, it's not quite working.
You can use this one.
Oh. Okay.
It's okay, that's why I have
a case. So we've got me putting my hands into a sleeve, and we're going to do some sock puppetry. Okay, this harks back to a previous topic where we're talking about keeping your life flat. Okay? There's a voice in everyone's head. I think I might have talked about this before, but I'll repeat myself. I'm old. Its job is to keep you from taking chances. Maybe you shouldn't do this. Maybe they think you're too this way, not enough that way. Its goal is to keep your life flat, so you don't take that chance that causes you to fail. But it also keeps you from succeeding. And sometimes you have to say, okay, I'm getting the noise in my head about maybe not, maybe I should be afraid. Well, then I say, thank you for sharing, and I'm still going to do what I need to do. I'm just going to do it anyways. Obviously, we have to be careful, but if we just live by this, then we're never going to get anything accomplished. But that's true of everybody else. When you understand that that is in common with everyone else, that's where giving permission comes in.
I think, if I may, I think what I'm hearing from you is talking about developing your intuition and deciphering, being aware of what's happening in your mind, mm-hmm. being aware of the voices and like labeling or defining them. Like, oh, that's my critic. That's mm-hmm. my ego inflated, super inflated. Mm-hmm. That's, or this is my intuition and I know it because I know what it feels like.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, and that by being paying attention to those thoughts and sometimes labeling it helps. Oh, that's the critic, that's the pessimist, or
whatever works.
That's the thing that is only living in the past and robbing me of the
yep.
present
yep.
and the future.
Yep. Yeah. Very wise. Very well said. Thank you. Beautiful. Anything else? Because I'm loving it. Give me.
Well, it's like, I mean, like to me, it represents like enlightenment and awakening and like that's a part of it, and that's it's a practice, and there's whole religions, you know, whole it's a practice is what it is, because it's a practice.
Yeah.
And you know, like trying to explain it and to somebody who's not interested in it or doing in it, it's like it's an experiential type of thing.
Mm-hmm. I want to point out something that everyone in this room has in common. In my judgment, and I'm pretty certain on this, we are all on the path to wisdom. Okay, the problem with the path to wisdom is we tend to die before we reach perfect wisdom. But it's the path that matters, that we're not watching 7 hours of TV tonight and then going to bed and starting over tomorrow. We're in the process of growth and learning, which is how we become wise. This question goes out to everybody. I don't need a specific answer, but I want you to ponder upon it. If something important happens in your life, do you just blow it off and then you move on? Or do you stop afterwards and ponder and digest it and chew it over and think, how could I have made that better? How can I learn from this? I'm pretty certain anybody here does not do that. That's what I thought. Because the way you become wise is by constantly questioning and constantly getting out of your comfort zone and taking new chances. And it's really important that we recognize this. It's not just a thing, you know, that something that happens at you. It's an active growth process. That's why we're having this discussion. That's why this is coming up. Because there is something in the future, and I'm here to tell you what it is. I am going to be vulnerable with you guys, okay? I no longer have a functioning penis. I've done a whole bunch of stuff to try and fix it, and it didn't work, so I've kind of given up. Why would I say such a thing? Because I am loved for everything, no matter what. In my personal life, as a public figure, as a friend, as a family member, whatever, that it doesn't diminish me. That now that I have reached a certain age where I'm no longer led around by my dick, it still doesn't matter. I'm still wildly valuable in the world. That I'm no longer having to be defined by, you know, my conquests in the world. That the phase that I'm in now is the phase that follows of becoming an elder. That all these decades that I've spent questioning, challenging myself, reaching out and taking chances with people, giving people permission and also giving myself permission, has led me to the point where I've grown immensely, and it's hugely satisfying. It's a great goal to have, and I urge anybody who has not been consciously thinking about it, think about it, because this is a really good path to a lot of happiness in the world. And that's why we're talking about giving permission, because, again, it all ties in together. I've covered a lot of different things, but they're all part of the same overview, which is that the more that we take chances, the more that we encourage other people to take chances and that we're there to catch them if they're going to fall. If we're there, like that whole metaphor, thank you, okay, that whole metaphor of falling backwards and people catching because they don't want to, well, that was your birthright all along. Well, the secret is, if you want to have friends, you have to be a friend. If you want to get caught, you have to be one of the ones to catch. That's why we're having this discussion here in this particular case. We have multiple tribes represented in this room, but we all have shared interests. I'm not you, you're not like me, but the things that we have in common are really groovy. And I like getting to know you people. I like learning from you too. I want to be your friend, yes.
I'd like to say something about taking chances.
Please.
Because I feel like in my history that I've been a person who was paralyzed by fear and so didn't take any chances.
Yep.
Who's been impulsively taking risks and being in unsafe situations.
Right.
And going through a process of developing my intuition better and kind of finding my place in the world. And, I felt called to like point out like take chances and do things, but also like taking a big risk or a chance for you is might look different from anybody else's chance or risk. You know,
absolutely.
So like just depending on what. So like, you know, yeah, like take chances and push the comfort level, but you know, it's not a race, you know, it's like it's a marathon. So like, you know, play for sustainability.
Mm-hmm.
You know. But I think like it's important to take risks and to fail.
Mm-hmm.
And to take risks and succeed.
Mm-hmm.
And to for me to accept success. You know,
how does that show up for you?
Like, giving myself permission to feel good about myself,
yes,
or something.
Got it. I get that.
To accept my success and mm-hmm. not discount it or say, like, it's not good enough or it doesn't count because of
right.
this or that.
Very wise.
Can I comment on that? Because as a fairly young person coming into the community and seeing the kind of universe, the cornucopia of just available resource and unavailable people and available experience and available things, you want to dive in head first. But all the time, you know, I sometimes before an event, for instance, I'll just feel this tension because I want to get in there. I want to do all the things. I just want to
I love this.
Be there. And my intuition actually tells me, slow down.
Mm-hmm.
You need to do what you can do now
mm-hmm.
and do it well and do it right and save the intense stuff that you don't know how to do yet
mm-hmm.
for when you know what you're doing
mm-hmm.
because things get better with time and experience.
Mm-hmm.
And having my intuition there to tell me these things is incredibly useful because socially... I try to be very forthright, but I'm cripplingly straightforward and honest.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, when other people are twisty and don't say what they mean,
uh-huh.
I end up completely baffled and kind of sitting there being like, okay, that didn't go the way I thought it was going.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, actually, intuition is a good way to feel my way through things because I might not know what happened, but I know that something happened and that, you know, we need to extricate from this situation now. And sometimes I know something good happened and I don't know exactly how, but my intuition says, pursue that. And I do, and it works out.
Mm-hmm.
So again, listen to your heart.
Yeah. And I honor everything that you say. What I would add is that I've every single event that I've ever organized, in the hours leading up to it, I go through a big, messy period where I'm going, oh, God, nobody's going to show up. Oh, God, this is one where I'm going to fail. This is one where everybody's going to say, oh, we're so sick of his bullshit that we're no longer going to endorse it. It never happened. You know, I mean, honestly, it has gone very, very well. And I'm very happy. But then again, I'm easily satisfied nowadays. I'm in a different phase. But thank you for sharing.
I think that's I think that can be also tied into dominance. Whereas... I'm going to act as if it's so.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to, even if I don't believe it is, I'm going to act like if it is and then it will be.
Mm-hmm. Or
like,
fake it till you make it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean,
like,
thank you very much for sharing, Mr. Sock Puppet.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm going to do this still anyway.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have to be perfect.
Yeah.
Actually, at a meetup last week, someone was really excited about something new that she was embarking on. This was actually a women's dominant meetup.
Mm-hmm.
She was very excited with something she's embarking on and was trying to, like, she wanted to accumulate all these skills in the meantime, but, you know, he's a truck driver, the person she's playing with. And so, like, they've only been able to play twice, and she wants to be all things for this guy when he comes back. And a lot of us were saying, basically, like, you know, having standards is a good thing. Having aspirations is a good thing.
Yeah.
But you're going to learn a lot more from him than you are from us.
Oh, yeah.
You're going to learn a lot more from the experience than you will from anything else. So throw yourself into the experience. Put yourself into the mindset that you will succeed.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, basically experience and start that feedback loop instead of coming up with kind of a game plan and a very, very strict thing so that you won't fail.
Mm-hmm.
Because having high standards is great as long as you're okay that you don't always get there, or you'll eventually get there.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Tying in with that, I have a secret agenda for these classes that I've been doing for years. I'm not good at keeping secrets, so I'll just tell it to you. One of the things I have to do with dominance is I have to convince them they already have everything that they need already. Because the biggest problem is insecurity, is unsureness. My role as somebody who's been around a long time is to bless someone and say, you've made it through. I've certified that you know this thing and you're good at it. Well, it's a whole lot different than trying to figure it out on your own, where you say, oh, well, if he says so, then I guess so. So I do a lot of that. It's not like I'm Mr. Perfect, but if I can tell that somebody has done beautifully, then I say, good for you, you know, congratulations, you've made it to your next level. Yes?
Related to people, like, being new dominants, a good kind of piece of advice I got was just to play with experienced bottoms.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah. Because they know their body, and they know, you know, if you're doing something wrong, or
right.
They know how to process a sensation and communicate to you if something needs to change, and also they know their limits better, like, kind of, like, pick up play with other new people. There's a lot of emotions that are being processed, like,
mm-hmm.
being new in the, you know, for both the top and the bottom, and, you know, I don't know, I guess, like, I'm learning, you know, how to recognize somebody's limits and how far, you know,
mm-hmm.
do I want to push them. Somebody
right.
once told me people's limits are like tissue paper. Like, you might want to push it, but you don't want to rip it,
mm-hmm.
you know, and so.
Right. That's something I can help you with. See, I'm going to talk about report cards.
About what?
Report cards.
Mm-hmm.
See, in classes like this, when we get to the practicals, is that, let's say you're flogging the bottom. One of the first things that I do is I have the bottom then give you your report card. Because they can give you instant feedback. Because if they don't do it, you're always going to have a question mark over your head. It's extremely valuable, and it's great for your confidence level. Because the thing that I find is missing more than anything else is not so much deep wisdom, because we're all working on that. There's still a shitload of stuff that I don't know. Let's see, I'm going to talk about Chuck Norris. Okay? I do that a lot. You know, I bring these sudden sidebars, okay? If you watch Chuck Norris in his later stuff, you'll notice that he really only does three different things. You know, he used to be, like, really, really knowledgeable about a lot of martial arts. But towards the end, when he got old, you know, then they'd film him spinning around, but then showing somebody off in the distance doing the final kick to the head, because he got too old to do it. But the point is he was not famous for knowing tens of thousands of things. He was famous for three really well done things. And really that is what is needed. It's not that you have to know everything. Just be good at what turns you on. And that's kind of important to put out there, because too many people think, well, you know, I haven't been to 10 years of, you know, kinkology, you know, advanced grade. Well, who the hell has? You know, people, we compare ourselves, and it's always to our own disadvantage. Like, for instance, up in San Francisco, for those of you who are not gay, kinky men, there's something called Bound in Public. It's a series of porn films. You've seen them? Anybody seen Bound in Public? Okay, got it. What they don't show you is all the work that is done leading up to this guy being bound up in the most intricate way you can ever imagine. Okay? They don't show the two guys who actually do the work. They just show the porn actors, you know, making motions like they did it. Okay. The guys that do it are not attractive to the eye. They're not sexually attractive to men or women, but they are great at doing this thing. And they do it over and over and over again, and, you know, it sells a lot of videos. The point is they can't do what I do, and vice versa. And it doesn't have to be that I have to go do this for 20 years in order to match them. If it doesn't turn me on, I'm not going to learn. The point is, find out what it is that pleases you, and you're never going to lack for playmates. You know, seriously. Also, I don't know how many of you have submissives? Okay. One thing that I have in my life, and this is just saying what's up, with both of my slaves, when they first met me and we were first negotiating, both of them being married men, you know, long-term husbands, one of them 38 years, the other one like 28 years, they would both say, no marks, no pain. No marks, no pain. That went away, not because I was trying to convince them. I didn't wheedle, come on, I'll be your friend. Didn't do any of that. What I did instead is that I would play with them in exactly the way that we had negotiated and kept my word and everything. But at some point, like I'd smack the side of the ass, they go, "That all you got?" I go, "Really? Okay. Oh, yeah, harder. Oh, yeah." And I'm going, "Okay, I'm paying attention here." Well, bottom line is, after, you know, X amount of time, both of them are happy as hell about getting marks and getting extreme play and hardcore. Both of them have told me that they love turning pain into pleasure. "Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah." And it's like, okay, good to know. It still surprises me. Because I was perfectly willing to respect their limits, all they wanted. But because they love me, because they trust me, because I was respectful and constantly helped them get to their next level and expand the envelope and expand their limits and all that other stuff. And we'll talk more about that in the future. But the point is that they both taught me in ways that I never could have figured out on my own. And that's true of every relationship. I've had 19 colored boys and 6 slaves. And I'll probably have more as time goes by in my life. And where I'm going with this is that I'm humble enough, and I admit that. You know, I'll use that word on myself. It's not a word that I use on myself often, but when it comes to being a Dom, I'm humble enough to understand that I may not know everything, but I'm willing to learn and I'm willing to grow. And that makes me really attractive to a lot of people. One of the topics that we'll be having coming up, as I said, is how to deal with unwelcome attention without being a jerk. That's a really important one. If you are part of a culture, if you're part of a tribe, because word gets around real fast if you're being a jerk to somebody. Somebody comes up to you with an open heart, you treat them shabbily, word gets around real fast. I'll give a good example. I'll call him George. That's not his actual name. I was at an event. It was Mr. San Diego Bear contest at a bar. And this guy came down from Orange County. Oh, he was just the cutest little thing. He was a perfect stand-in for Santa Claus. Had the beard, had the sparkly eyes. You know, he was just so much fun. And every time there was something fun going on in the bar, he was right in the middle of it. He was being a real instigator. But he saw this guy, who I will call George, thought he was hot. And he's a very good-looking man. And he was just kind of trying to figure out how to initiate contact with George and kind of follow him around the bar. George goes into the bathroom. Santa's waiting outside the door. George comes out and spits in his face and leaves the bar. Santa was so brokenhearted, he has never come back. And I chewed out George. I knew him. And oh, I got a long, long, long email full of hate. And, you know, I was quite clear that he has no listening for what I had to say. This is the same guy, George, who can never hang on to a submissive for more than one date. Really. Every time I see him, he's with a different submissive. The online world is great for him, but he can't maintain long-term relationships with submissives. He tends to be way, way, way too abusive and way too cruel and all the rest of that package. So that's not me, you know, and obviously I'm not advocating that in this gathering. This is entirely in the other direction. Okay. But where I'm going with this is that in order for me to have staying power as a community member, as a sir, as somebody who attracts and retains long-term submissives, one of the guys that is going to Palm Springs with me has been my boy for 16 and a half years. And haven't seen much of him lately. He's retired in the world, lives out in a mole, but this is a nice little chance to get reconnected with each other. But we're still very connected. In order to have that, I have to be real with him all the time. Okay, I know I'm wandering in my discussion. I apologize for that. But in order to give permission, again, it all goes back to credibility. Credibility is entirely based on authenticity and full self-expression, like I said, and kindness. Okay. I went through a really shitty period this last week, vulnerable again. I fell behind in my medication. I take Androgel, which is a gel you rub for testosterone, and I ran low, and I went into a deep depression, which is what happens to me. And luckily enough, I caught it, where I recognized that the mood I was in did not have anything to do with the things that I thought were making me sad. I realized if I was having that much trouble coping, then I really needed to fix it. So I went and took care of it, and I'm back on track again. I'm glad to say that I did not cause too much damage while I was in my down period. But the point is that my slaves were extremely patient and extremely willing to help me get through it, and I was very true with them at all times to say, I'm going through a bad period right now. I didn't have to stomp around and snort and, you know, put on some kind of act, because I wasn't. I held on to them, and I just basically just needed to be with them and be present. And that endeared me to them more than anything else, that I was being real and vulnerable with them. And they respect me even more. I lost no status with them whatsoever. My relationships as a kinky sir, as I've said before in these classes, is based upon extreme intimacy. As a longtime kinky man, I'm really clear that that is what I've always wanted and always craved, and I believe that when we are healthy with each other, then that is what we're getting, unlike hospital visit. That's not extreme intimacy, that's just awful. And that's a whole different category indeed, but it makes the rest of us look bad. That's why we have to be vigilant. That's why we have to protect each other. That's why we have to stand strong for each other and make sure that somebody who is into that kind of shit comes to no good end. Because I can tell you, there's been many, many, many people that I've had to make sure did not come back, you know, in the decades past. So, any thoughts, any observations, any questions, anything at all? Please.
I was thinking about inspiring, going back to what your original topic was, inspiring people to go along with you, to carry through with your goals and plans. I recalled something that I heard from, I forget who it was, it was an autobiography of some sort, talking about improv, improvisational comedy and slapstick and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And the first rule of improv is you need to go along with someone's enthusiasm, and instead of changing the subject or creating a right angle or a U-turn in whatever's happening, you say yes and.
Mm-hmm.
You confirm what they say, and then you build. Or you confirm what they're doing, and then you build. And so I've seen this happen, you know, a couple times with, actually, with rope class. The rope community here is actually very good.
Mm-hmm.
But as a beginner, you know, I actually asked for help from someone nearby. I said, am I doing this right? And she said, yeah, that's the way you do that one. Let me show you a modification on this. And she just, like, worked it up real quick, and it looked incredible. It was a food one more time.
Mm-hmm.
And it looked incredible. Basically, she gave me a yes and.
Mm-hmm.
I see you're enthusiastic and kind of interested in this, and that you're interested in learning. Let me build that and give you something even cooler to look at. Let me
show you the next step.
Let me show you the next step.
Yeah.
And I think that
attitude... Help you break through, yes.
That's just me kind of rephrasing what I've gotten from what you were talking about.
Yep.
Is that it's important to confirm and then reinforce and then encourage what's happening around you so that it all moves towards something even better. Even
consensus.
Yeah.
Right. Instead of saying, you're doing it wrong, be like, that's right for your purpose... This is something we can do to make it even better.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
I agree. And the word that I would bring up in response to that is intentionality. It may not even be a word. Well, let's just say intention. As I said, when I make a declaration to somebody, and thank you, this brings us back home. If I make a declaration to someone, I'm putting my ass on the line. Being a man of my word represents me in the world. If I speak to someone powerfully and say, this is what you can count on. This is what I'm good for. Like I said, well, word gets around about you very quickly that you're not going to say, well, if I'm not too busy that day or if, you know, I got nothing better to do, you know, I'm not using no passive voice at all. By giving my declarations and then following through over and over and over again, it's for my benefit, not just theirs. Because I like to look at myself in the mirror and know that I'm the kind of guy that can thrill them and be thanked for it. And thrill them and be thanked for it. To me, that's my pleasure. When I tell them that I'm here to make sure that this is nothing but pleasure and fun for you.
what I'll say when I'm playing with somebody for the first time is I will say, I would rather underdo it than overdo it, since this is our first time together. I want you to remember this well. I want you to come back to me going, oink, 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 I want some more. By saying those words, I'm throwing my house off the cliff. Okay, I mean, or I'll use a better metaphor. The hat over the fence. Okay, this is an old story. Two people are walking by this very tall fence. They're walking down the road, and they see this big, tall fence. They can't see over it. And one of them says, wow, I would love to know what's on the other side of that fence. Well, the other person grabs their hat, the first person's hat, and throws it over the fence and says, now you're going to find out. You know, again, that it's by giving your word and then taking a few chances, you're not just improving your life, you're improving a lot of people's lives around you as dominants, as permission givers, as people who care deeply and have been through the flames, okay, and who have, you know, we've all had stuff we've had to go through. That's how we grow, that's how we learn. Some people have had easier paths than others, okay? But it's all to the good as long as we continue to strive to be better at what we do. And the only way that that happens is by setting goals and constantly changing the goals, by questioning, am I stuck? Am I in a rut? And saying, okay, what can I do to get out of it? I'm going through that right now. I do that, I call it going through midlife crisis every 3 months. Because, you know, I want to keep becoming better. Please, your thoughts.
Well, there's a psychological effect called the Dunning-Kruger effect, which states that people that have self-doubt or that self-question or that take time to self-analyze, where am I going, where have I been, what have I sort of made an error on, demonstrate not just a higher intelligence but a higher skill set than those that don't. In fact, the people that score lowest on a skill set or an intelligence test usually have a big blind spot as to what their actual skill level is.
Yep.
They think they're great, but yep, they're actually terrible at it.
Yep.
So that self-analysis and that self-doubt is actually, you know, it's part of how we demonstrate to ourselves that we're pretty high-level players at
yep,
certain things.
Absolutely. Thank you. Yes?
I'd like to comment on that, because I find more and more my success in many things, including my research, singing, etc., a lot of it is getting out of my own way, because I have all these roadblocks, mental roadblocks in place that cause
yeah,
anxiety, or in terms of singing, you actually, you know, you're trying really hard to hit that note, so you tighten up everything.
Right, right.
Which is exactly the wrong thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say that, yeah, people who are brilliant or shine in some way, shape, or form are often riddled by self-doubt and anxieties and attention deficiencies and all sorts of things. And I guess the ones who succeed are the ones who work every day against themselves, for themselves,
yep,
to actually realize their potential.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's a lot of potential in there, and but, you know, there are all these things that keep you from actually embracing them.
Well, the difference is how you respond to the doubt.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if
yep,
you're responding to it as it's something that happens and I carry on,
mm-hmm,
it's going to have a different effect than if I respond to it as this is factual truth, therefore I will not succeed, therefore
yeah,
I will not make attempt.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know.
I mean,
wait, you know, I can go on and on, but yeah, it's definitely like how you're processing that working part of the system that
mm-hmm,
can push you to great lengths either way.
Yeah.
And overcoming that is a great way to have confidence for the next time, to tell yourself, I can do this because I've done this, and building on your successes, building on your confidence, is one way in which to combat, you know, kind of natural anxieties and restrictions that we put on ourselves.
What I invite everybody to do, thank you, this is good sharing. What I invite everybody to do is to consider the concept of laughing at your own foibles, because we all have them. We all have those little behaviors that tie our bootlaces together and cause us to trip. And again, with the sock puppet, that I'll go on and on and on. See, I have many virtues, but one of my vices is I never know when to shut up. Oh, I'm a talker. But, you know, I laugh at myself. And I say, oh, I'm such a bossy queen. You know, I'm a control queen. I do that. Sorry about that. You know, turning it away, I say, sorry about that. I'm going to let go of that now. I'm just going to be in the moment instead. That we all have old behaviors that, you know, can really tie us up, so to speak. Now, I want to talk briefly about imposter syndrome. It does tie in with what we've been talking about. I want to hear some viewpoints from you guys, too. So I'll begin it, but let's continue it when I get done. I have been part of the kink scene a long time. The thing that has been number one on my list all along is the terror that somebody who really knows what the hell they're talking about is going to come up at a play scene, tap me on the shoulder and say, get the hell out of the way. Let me show you the right way to do it. It never happened. I keep waiting for that mythical person who knows 100 times more than me to show up. Undoubtedly, they're out there. But it's not their job to, like, you know, patrol me. That's for damn sure. They got enough on their own damn plate. The fact of the matter is, as long as you're in the game, as long as you're playing, as long as you're growing, as long as you're learning, as long as you're opening up your heart to new possibilities, we're all on that same damn path. There are people out there, like I said, who can, you know, who've 10th degree black belt in whatever topic. And that's fine. But I don't have to compare myself to them because I'm living my own life. I am my own perfect self from moment to moment, the way that I have to be and the way that I need to be, because I can't be any other way. That I let go of imposter syndrome about a year ago and finally just took ownership of the fact that I'm fine the way I am. That I'm not a flawed master because I don't, you know, treat my slaves like shit that I could scrape off my boot. That I'm not a flawed top because I care deeply about what they need. That I'm not, you know, less than for any reasons. That I'm fine the way that I am. That I'm just perfect this way. I had to let go of it consciously because it was really, really messing with me for a long time. Because there's any number of people who will tell you otherwise. In just a moment. Who will say, you know, like in my life, can't speak for you guys. They'll say, a real leather man does not drink from a straw. Or they'll say, a real leather man does not dance with his arms above his head. Or a real leather man, and ever since I heard that, I've made a point of doing it. But, you know, a real leather man, dot, dot, dot. The problem with that is that that is the mating call of the control queen, who has to have things be very rigorous and they can't cope with making it up as you go along. That's my observation, my judgment. So
it's
an
exclusionary tactic.
Pardon me?
It's an exclusionary tactic. Oh, you're not a real one.
It's a way of putting them higher and you lower.
Yeah.
It's scarcity. Yeah. So yes, please, share.
Imposter syndrome is something that is sort of a hot topic amongst my peers and colleagues currently. And
can you define it as
please? I want to hear your definition.
Imposter syndrome?
Yeah, can you define it?
It's when those hamsters in your head are running on that wheel and yelling at you that you're not good enough for this. They're going to find out that you're faking it. That somebody is going to spill the beans that you're just pulling out of your ass. And you know, I'm in a field that's new, and so there's like two or three successful people doing it in the country, and it's constantly running. And so one of the best ways that we found to combat it is we talk to each other. You know, we reach out, we have an online community, mm-hmm. and we reach out like, oh, those hamsters are running today, like they ate a monster steak, somebody help me out. And then people talk to you about why they see you as an export or as a true gem in the field, or how you've enlightened or uplifted them in the field and in the pursuit of what we're doing. And
they validate you.
Yes, and I have a lot of feelings about trying to get external validation, but we're human beings, we're social creatures, and so sometimes, especially among peer groups, That's not, it's just necessary for us.
It's definitely validating, but I don't think that, like, it's the point of getting validation from the person. It's the point of getting an outside perspective.
Yes.
The whole...
different perspective.
The whole imposter thing is about shame.
Yeah.
And the validation is the only way you can get lifted out of it, because a shame spiral can destroy you.
Mm-hmm. And I think we should have friends that call us out on our bullshit.
Oh, yeah.
When our egos are inflated.
Oh, yeah.
But we should also have friends that call us out on our bullshit when we're talking ourselves down.
Yes.
It goes the same way.
Oh, absolutely.
Right? So having community, I think, is one of the best ways to
come. Excellent. Tribe. Yes.
While we're talking about tribe, we were talking about credibility and resiliency and the community, you know, running the bad people out of town. And, like one thing that has helped me in my confidence as a dominant is I've heard stories and seen people fuck shit up, get it wrong, piss people off, do something that's not safe, cause harm, maybe unintentionally. You know, I'm talking about people who are unintentionally, you know, not people
right.
who are intentionally causing harm, but there's a place for them in society. But that... there's nothing that I can do that I'm going to fuck up so bad that I'm not going to be able to come into my community.
Yeah.
And that other people can fuck up in other different ways and still get supported by the community in some way. And kind of the illustration I wanted to tie this to was how you were talking about having a leader and following the leader of, you know, we're all having permission to have fun it was the monkey that hit the other person with the branch or whatever.
Right.
You know, like...
and how people judge
that, that somebody can make a mistake, maybe unintentionally, and get run out of the community.
Yep.
In some ways.
Yep.
Or feel like, you know, in that... So it's not always just like, you know... like somebody, you know, like innocent, I want to say innocent, I don't know what to call them, but people who are well-meaning, who've made mistakes, who somebody says, I don't like that person, and everybody hears about it. Now everybody has an opinion, and,
right.
and their reputation is...
Yeah, where do they go to get the reputation back?
So,
right.
Yeah. So, hold on a second.
Well, while you're thinking about that, I'd like to say the same
yes.
thing, but different words.
Okay,
I editorialized about this at the left of the slash dinner this last time. The topic came up. What do we do when a bad top is, you know, rampaging through Tokyo, you know? And so there's people who are like, oh, drive them away with sticks. Drive them away with, you know, atomic bombs, whatever. And so then I said, really what we're talking about is responsibility for each other. Because if I take responsibility for your safety, well-being, and success... In order for the success portion, which is what you're talking about, we have to incorporate mercy. Because everybody fucks up. Redemption has to be available. That I cannot demand redemption of anybody if I'm not willing to provide it. And that I gave the example, and I'll get back to you in a moment. I gave the example in the old days in the gay leather bars where some young guy shows up eager as hell, tail wagging, wearing a brand new harness and jeans and white tennis shoes. What happens? All the old timers make fun of him. You know, ridiculing, oh, that he's just so stupid, he doesn't know what the hell he's doing. Well, what I would do is I would go up to him and I'd befriend him. And I'd talk to him and I'd get to know who he was. And I would honestly care. And I'd say, did you know? And I'd walk into the front door and I'd say, that building right there, the people that work there, you can trust them. They're nice people and they sell really good, inexpensive combat boots with look great with those jeans. Oh, thank you. You know, instead of spending $160, he'll pay $40. And I'll say, they're really good people. You can trust them. Have them help you shop. Well, that's a hell of a lot more valuable to that guy than me just making fun of him along with everybody else and pecking at him like, you know, like he's the pink monkey in a cage full of brown monkeys. Because we all have to start somewhere. We have to honor the new people. We have to give them some mercy. Because what if that person who is being pecked at actually has the potential to be the one that brings the golden age? If we're not available for that possibility, it will never happen. We have to keep
being open to that possibility consciously. Thank you. Your turn, and then you.
Everybody likes to kick a downed dog.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that, like, if you are able to be resilient, people will see, you know, that whatever the reputation was, mm-hmm. either is changed or is gone, and, like, I'm not that person. Like, if you get to know me, and I continue to be authentic, and to be with integrity, mm-hmm. and show up with that, then, you know, my reputation will precede me. You know, admitting when I'm wrong, admitting when I made a mistake, figuring out how to fix it.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. And hopefully having people support you in excellence by helping you to understand what went wrong and what you can do about it in the future. See, one of the things that I say as an elder, her next and then you. One of the things that I say often, and I say to everyone here listening to me, if no one else believes in you, I will. And I stand by that. If the day comes where you're getting pecked at, then come and talk to me, and I'll help you find your center again, because that's my duty as an elder. So your turn, please, and then you.
So I actually had a little bit of a point in terms of coming into something as a new person and having something, you know, you did something wrong that people are going to make fun of you for, coming in with a sense of humor about yourself, mm-hmm. being introspective enough to know that what you do is often ridiculous. You might talk to your vegetables while you're cooking. Someone in lab today was talking to his samples in lab, and he was telling them, get in the tube, goddammit. You have these things that you do. And I called him out on it. I said, are you talking to your samples? And he said, yeah, I am. They're naughty little things. I'm like, you could whip them. I only let kink leak a little bit into the work. But, right, right. But you know, I think having a sense of humor actually starts to erode the edges of your imposter syndrome. Because you come in not knowing as much as everyone else, or thinking that you're flying under the radar, being super confident. But at the same time, people who are in the know will know that you're inexperienced, and it's okay. And it's okay to say, hey, I don't know this, can you teach me? Because most of the time, the good ones love to teach. Mm-hmm. Everyone wants to make baby versions of themselves,
yes.
by sharing what they know.
Yes.
This is something that I learned when I came to grad school. All scientists want to make more baby scientists,
yeah.
by teaching and nurturing. They don't always get it right, but everyone wants to help once you reach a certain level of accomplishment. And trusting in the community and trusting in yourself can really contribute towards that. Because one of the basic tenets of cognitive behavioral therapy for some of these issues that we've been discussing, unattainable standards, just wanting to come in and be all to everything, is kind of analyzing what causes that bad feeling, accepting it, realizing that the thoughts behind it aren't really reflecting real life. You don't fail at everything, so you should try this thing. Having community behind that reinforces it tenfold. But it's not the only thing.
Yeah.
You need to use the introspection and the experience you get from the community to look inside yourself and start building up your own confidence as well.
I would add one additional word, healthy.
Mm.
In a healthy community,
right.
as opposed to competition.
Right.
So you have to watch out for that. Our whole culture is about competition. I promise we're going to get to you. But competition, you watch TV and it's almost all competition. Reality shows, Kill 'Em All Island and Aggressive Kitchen and all the rest of that stuff.
This one's the best.
Yeah, and again, it's part of our larger culture that if you're not the best, get the fuck off the stage. You know, which is very sick as a cultural expectation. That if you're not the best singer, shut up, go away, do the walk of shame. If you're not the best dancer, get off the dance floor. We all deserve to dance with all our hearts without caring how we look. It is our birthright. But we lost it a long time ago because, you learn. No, that's wrong, that's bad, you don't do that. You should shut up, you sing like a goat, whatever the hell. And it becomes noise in our heads. But part of the whole process of giving permission that works really well is just saying, it's okay to be clumsy. It's okay to not be the best. Come play anyways. And that gives huge permission right there. And it all comes back to permission. One of the things that I do when I'm teaching these, you know, especially the practicals, is I say, right away, it's okay to be clumsy. It's okay. I'll help you. I'll make sure that you're not clumsy anymore. I will help you in any way that I can, because I'm dedicated to your excellence and your success. That's why I do this stuff. Because, again, like you said, you know, making babies. I'm going to use another term, embracing the ripples. See, one of the things that I love about doing this is that these are not repeat faces in this class. I've done this class and done this kind of mentoring for a long time. Where are all those people? They're out in the world making a difference. They're succeeding. They're getting laid a lot, frankly. They're having fun. And they move to other cities.
Sex positivity.
Yay! And they're out there in the world causing ripples in the world. And then it just keeps spreading. Long after we're all dead, like I said, it's very satisfying. Please, wind us up here.
We have a value on our team, Team Casey, our family. We both contributed to it. Sean used to say to me, people judge themselves on their intention, and they judge others on the result. Mm-hmm. We're opposite, so we don't see eye to eye a lot, so we've had to learn how to deal with mm-hmm. a lot of that. What we decided to value in our family is you only have to give as much. You say mercy, I say grace.
Good.
You only have to give as much grace as you want to receive. Not a drop more. So when you have to be the bigger person in the room, or you have to handle the conflict in a gentle, loving way when everyone else is out with you, you've screwed up in the community, and you don't want to be the bigger person, you want to kick it off, just, you only have to give as much grace as you want to get. Not a drop more.
Okay. I'd like to tell another story that relates to that. Thank you. I'm full of stories. I'm old.
Last one. We have 5 minutes.
I can accept that. Indeed, they're on a timer too. I used to dance at a bar called Peacock Alley. Its nickname was Blackcock Alley because that's where all the black guys went to dance. They had the best music. I loved to dance. Mm-hmm. I'm the only 6'5", 270-pound white male that you've ever met that can dance as good as Janet Jackson's backup dancers. Really. Really. And so, I mean, my favorite compliment at this bar was some guy I had never met before comes up to me and says, how can someone so white dance so black? And I'll say, I'm blessed that way. But so then one day, I got tapped on the shoulder. Excuse me. And I turned, excuse me. And I turn around and I look, little guy, about 150 pounds, dripping wet, says, excuse me, you'd look a lot better if you'd put your shirt back on.
Wow.
And I looked at him and I thought, the first impulse was destroy. You know? But I paused, and I just left myself open to possibility, and what I said to him instead is I said, on your 50th birthday, I want you to remember this conversation. When you are unnecessarily cruel to the nicest guy in the bar. And just turned around and walked away. And it was like a curse that on his 50th birthday, he's going to remember that. Because, you know, he was like in his 20s. And what I like with that, the reason why I give this example again, is that technically, legally, I was the bigger man. But I handled it in such a way where he didn't have to eat out of a straw for the next 6 months, for one thing. But also, you know, I wanted there to be a life lesson in there. I wanted it to be a teachable moment. And that's a good goal, you know, that I would urge everybody to consider. That as dominance, as leaders, that how we carry ourselves in the world is what speaks for our character. And how we react to things can also speak for our character. And people are more likely to follow somebody who reacts with grace. You know, they're a lot more likely to, like I said, bringing back the monkeys, beating on each other, the tribe watches and they vote with their feet. Angry person over here, someone who treats them with respect and kindness even though they don't have to, people are going to follow that person. And that's what leadership has to do with, because people are not going to follow somebody who is not going to be kind who's not going to be forgiving, who's not going to be somebody who shows character in the midst of all, you know, this tumultuous life that we live. So having expressed that, we've got two more minutes. Who wants to take it home?
I will.
Okay.
I was just, to piggyback on what you were saying, I saw an interesting video about leadership, and it's a video of a crowd, and there's one guy dancing. Mm-hmm. You know, then another guy comes and dances, then another guy, and then pretty soon everybody's running to the crowd to join and be. Mm-hmm. And what they were illustrating was it wasn't the first person that started dancing that was the leader, it was the first follower mm-hmm. that showed people, or the third guy, you know, to show people, like, we can follow this, to how to be a follower. Mm-hmm. And they followed the follower, not necessarily the leader. I thought it was interesting. Maybe
thank you.
I would say something that I've been trying to do over the past year or so, especially, is when I go into a situation or I come up with, I run into a conflict or I am going into a new situation, I think about what I want to get out of it. Because if I don't think about what I want to get out of something, I respond emotionally. If someone pisses me off, if a friend says something insulting that they didn't know was insulting, I can slap someone down. I can tear them apart verbally.
Yeah, very much.
But what do I want to get out of this conversation? If someone is rude to me, what do I want to get out of it? I want them to respect me enough to not do it again. And the only way to do that is to respond rationally and calmly and diffuse the situation in some way.
Right.
But only by holding on to what do I want to get out of the situation.
Right. As opposed to just reacting against.
Right. Exactly. And but the thing is also, what do I want to get out of it? And what do I want the rest of whoever's involved to get out of it?
What do I want my effect to be?
What do I want my ripples
intention?
To be?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
What do I want to happen because of my actions? And the answer is always something good. I never want something bad to happen because of what I do. No one does, I don't think.
Well,
I don't think anyone wants bad things.
No, no. And if it's because somebody's being rude to you, you want to stop that behavior. Basically, hold up a mirror and teach them something.
Right. It's called supporting them in excellence.
Right. But you don't want to punish.
Right.
You don't want to deliver
it's
justice.
It's not because if you
that,
start
you
out with a
spanking. Some grace.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, they're more likely to listen if you're not just going to react against.
It depends on how well you know the person.
Of
you
course.
Know, if
it is
sorry, if there's somebody else that wanted to talk, I'm not. I'm
9 o'clock.
Yeah. Was there somebody else that wanted? Wasn't? Didn't you want to say something? No.
Well, I want to thank everybody. I'm
thank
sure
you.
We could go on for hours and hours and hours to come.
Compassionate leadership.
Yeah, I vote for that. So, I thank you, everybody.
Oh, are we going to hit things?